evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is Donald R. Prothero. He taught college geology and paleontology for 40 years. He is the author of numerous books and scientific papers. And we're talking about his new book, Weird Earth, Debunking Strange Ideas About Our Planet. Don, welcome back to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you again.
Well, it's great to hear from you.
What, you know, you've written paleontology and geology articles and texts. What was the impetus for writing this book? And you've actually written several other similar ones before.
Yeah, actually, that's part of the reason. I had already done a book debunking Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster and other cryptozoology ideas. And then I did a book debunking UFOs and aliens, which came out several years ago. And this is something that's actually even closer to my formal training than the other two.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, this book is about geology, and I actually teach this stuff all the time, and I have formal training on it. And not only that, I do research in things like the Earth's magnetic field, so I know this from my own training and research. And during the last several years, I've been a part of a regular blog called Skeptic Blog, where I often would pick a topic of geoscience being distorted. So I had a lot of had thought about it a lot and written a bunch of it in smaller length articles. But then I sat down and thought, well, this is really something that needs to be said, because there's a lot of this garbage out there going on, especially when I started seeing all these things in the media about people believing the flat Earth again. And I thought, what century are we in?
Okay, I don't know if we're at the same age or I'm older than you. I couldn't believe when that was. First, I thought it was a joke.
Right.
And then supposedly noted people, I would say celebrities, started saying, like, right, well, maybe we're not sure. And I'm going like, what?
And, yes. Well, there is something there. You look at the people who did it, and it's mostly celebrities who are famous for being famous.
Yeah.
Whereas they don't actually have any distinguished things, or maybe they might have been a pop singer. And then a handful of athletes jumped onto this, including Shaquille O'Neal, who later confessed he was pulling the media's to nose on it. But most the people doing it are not what you call the great intellectual lights of society, and they, you know, sort of, you know, basically they're famous for being famous. They get much more publicity than their intellectual prowess demands. And this tells you how our society rates people like athletes and celebrities as more important than the people who actually know stuff. You know, so it scares me that they are
it
now
scares me.
Important enough to do that. Yeah.
Now,
that's where it came from.
Yeah. The first chapter in this book should be read by all, like, say, high schoolers or junior high schoolers. It's a whole introduction to how science works, what it really does and what it really believes. And and it's about critical thinking. You know what? We can't go through that whole chapter or we'll get nowhere. But one of the things I do want to ask you, and I swear people don't understand this, scientists are not looking for a final truth. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. People have known since about the middle of the 20th century, when philosophers of science pointed this out, science is a never-ending process of testing ideas, testing hypotheses, and trying to shoot them down. It's much harder to prove something true than it is to prove it false. You know, famous analogy for that is an old one from the philosophical textbooks, which is, you could say, all swans are white, and no number of white swans will prove that statement true, but one non-white swan, like the black swan of Australia, will prove it false. And so that's much easier to shoot things down, what Karl Popper, the philosopher, called falsifying them, than it is to verify them. We don't have verification, we have falsification. So real scientists, not the kind you read in high school textbooks, but real scientists spend their time trying to critique and shoot down ideas, sometimes their own, sometimes their other colleagues' ideas, and the ideas are being shot down all the time, and that's the way the process works. It weeds out the bad ideas, and that leads you then to another hypothesis, and you keep trying to do that until nothing can shoot it down, and every time it's tested, it is corroborated, not proven, corroborated. Because there's a difference, right? We don't prove things. We just test them, and if they're holding up, then they're corroborated. And that's all science is about. It's very provisional. It's tentative. It's never final. It's always, well, we still have the possibility we can shoot that down or falsify it. And that's one thing that distinguishes science from dogma.
That's right.
You talk to someone who's a hardcore Marxist or a religious fanatic, and they will not allow their fundamental assumptions to ever be challenged. But everything in science is always open to question, always must be, or you stop doing science.
There's a really good phrase you use in the book. Science is really applied skepticism.
Right, right.
You don't believe in any idea. You accept it based on evidence.
Right. We don't use the word believe.
That's a religious and cultural term. Yeah.
Right, right. It doesn't belong in science, nor do things like infallible or you know, fact. Or technically speaking, we shouldn't be even using the words fact or truth. But in conversing with the public, you have to still talk in their language. So something extremely well established, like evolution or gravity, is a fact, even though in science we consider it to be extremely well-tested hypothesis.
Well, that's part of the problem, is when you use words like theory, the public has one idea of what that means, whereas the actual definition and how it's used is totally different.
That's correct. That's one of the biggest problems we have, is it's a very different concept in science. Science theory is the most well-established, well-corroborated ideas we have that pull together many different fields of inquiry. And so, for example, gravity is still a theory, okay? But nobody's floating out of the chairs at the moment, so far as I know. And the germ theory of disease is why we are fighting COVID right now, okay? But there's a lot of people who don't believe in science and think witch doctors cure disease, but most of us would rather we have an antibiotic instead, if it's a bacterial disease at least. So these things are theories, and that's the highest possible level of acceptance in science. But, of course, as we said, in the public, that usually means a wild crackpot idea, not the just the opposite of what it means in science. And so, unfortunately, of course, creationists exploit this misunderstanding the time and can't ever get it corrected for their minds. So
there's a lovely section in your book about baloney detection, and I can't go through all of them because we'll be here all day, but first of all, and it's, this is a very famous quote, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence.
Yes.
You can't just say the Earth is flat. You've got to have some extraordinary proof that the Earth is flat.
Extraordinary proof, that's right. When Darwin published On the Origin of Species in 1859, the burden of proof was on him to establish this idea he had. And he tried to meet that as best he could in his first book. And over the last 150-plus years now, gigantic amounts of evidence have accumulated to support it. So for creationists to overturn evolution, not enough to just have one little inconsistency or one little observation that doesn't seem to support it in their minds. It's got to be the entire body of evidence. Likewise with climate change. The evidence has been accumulated basically for a century and a half, and especially in the last 50 years. And for a climate denier to actually overturn climate science, you can't just get one person saying one thing.
That's right.
You have to overturn a huge number of data from every place, from the ice caps and the deep sea cores and the meteorological records and the melting of glaciers. It's everything pointing in the same direction, which is why there's 95 to 99% of climate scientists agree it's happening.
Well, that brings up one of the other baloney detecting arguments from authority and credential mongering.
Right.
People may sound like they know what they're talking about. You look at their credentials.
Right.
But oftentimes that has nothing to do with it. Oftentimes they're not even related to the subject matter.
That's right. And a lot of people, of course, unfortunately, they're cowed by people who sound impressive or someone who flashes their PhD, for example. And in my business, if someone puts the word PhD after their title on the cover of a book, that's a sure sign the book itself is garbage. And that's it, because I don't ever put my title on the cover of my book, and it may not be mentioned in the dust jacket flap biography on the inside. I don't have to flash my title to have credibility, because I do it based on what I write and what I talk about. But a person who's trying to sell you snake oil will try to cow you to thinking, well, I've got a PhD, I'm smarter than you, and therefore you should listen to me. And that's, of course, a false use of argument of authority. And so I always tell people, you know, for example, creationists, none of them actually have any training in fossils or any real training in the sciences relevant to evolution. So, these guys that I debated against over 40 years now, they can't tell one bone from another, and yet they'll write about fossils, okay? And so I say, you know, if they have a PhD, you have to look at what that PhD was in. It has to be a field relevant to what they're arguing, or their opinion is no better informed than anyone else's, right? So they're climate deniers in the physics community and a few other places, but not in the climate science community.
That's right.
People actually deal with the real data. And so your guy who has a PhD in the relevant field, now I actually do climate science professionally, so I can qualify myself to do that. But most of these people who argue against climate science are physicists, and their opinion is no more informed than anybody else. They may be smart, they may be a great scientist, but they're not a climate scientist. And the argument I usually say is that when you see these kinds of people who are not in the field, are not evolutionary biologists or paleontologists arguing about evolution, or climate scientists arguing about climate, their opinion is no more informed than the average layperson's is. They're no more qualified to judge. You wouldn't ask the person with a PhD to write a symphony or to fix a car. If their field isn't in those fields, their opinion's irrelevant. But that's how the society does it. They think PhD means you're smart and everything. But I joke that what PhD really means is, you know, when you go to grad school for 6 or 7 years to earn a PhD, you jump through all these hoops. And that's what your degree means, is you know how to jump through all the hoops and write the level of what they're expected and do original research. But what it actually does, it makes you so focused on one narrow research problem that you actually lose a
that's
lot
right.
of your breadth
right.
of,
right.
of scientific knowledge, because you can't focus on anything else while you're doing this. And so, if anything, it makes you dumber.
Now, this is one of my favorites because I just love the way it sounds. Not all persecuted geniuses are right.
Yeah.
And that's so true. Just because they claim themselves a persecuted genius, that doesn't mean they need to be listened to.
That's right.
First of all, chances are they're not a genius either.
That's right. That actual quote actually comes from Michael Shermer's book. And he often talked about how the skeptic offices get in Altadena, get almost every week, numerous big, thick envelopes and electronic communications and all the rest with someone who's got a crackpot idea how to disprove Einsteinian relativity or to upset, Newtonian mechanics. Or, you know, there's a zillion crazies out there who think they're geniuses. And the point of being that they really want to make the kind of change they claim they want to make, they have to not just try to get it published somewhere, which, of course, on the Internet, you can publish any crap, but you have to actually get it published in a scientific journal. And that is where the real filtering lies, because scientific journals have strict standards. They have peer review, which a lot of people don't realize. Science is one of the last places left in any part of our society where there is fact-checking and mistake correction, right?
That's right.
The media now is almost all completely lost any track of that being very rigorous, and a lot of the media is open propaganda, and the Internet is just a giant cesspool of lies. But scientists can't get away with that. If you write up an article, it goes to several of your colleagues who you usually don't know who they are. It's usually anonymous, so they can say any nasty thing about that they want, and they're protected by anonymity. And then the journal editor has to decide whose comments are valid, and they may reject you right off the top of the head, or they may say come back with a better idea. But you have to pass this filter, this strict gauntlet of fact-checking and all the rest before you can get anything published. Nothing else has got that kind of scrutiny anymore. So science is one of the last bastions of really well-checked, corrected, and fact-checked information. And people don't appreciate how important that is, especially because now we're so full of alternate realities and fake news and lies of every kind.
And last, and as soon as I hear this word, red flags wave all over the place. It's a conspiracy.
Yeah.
As soon as I hear that term... I'm immediately either shutting it off or closing the book or turning off the television. I mean, it's just, there's just not that. I mean, and some of the conspiracies that people suggest are, wow. I mean, it's like the Illuminati to the 10th power. I mean, it's weird. And we're going through that right now. I mean, QAnon is one big conspiracy theory. When I started reading, I'd heard the name, but when I started to actually read what they were believing in, I thought it was a joke.
Nope, it's dead serious. And that's the sad part, especially after the election now, this extraordinary thing. They're saying that a very high percentage of Republicans are disappointed with Trump's loss, are just going into whole hog conspiracy thinking, not just QAnon, which has been getting more and more popular to begin with, but all these various conspiracy ideas out there, and they're just going wild because there's nothing to check with reality anymore. And they don't listen to anything that isn't already confirming what they want to know. And the best way I can argue against conspiracy thinking, of course, is that the reality of it is the larger the conspiracy, the less likely it is to be true, because people don't keep secrets very well. We know this because every time there has been a real conspiracy, usually something like WikiLeaks or some kind of a whistleblower comes out and it's exposed, right? All the conspiracies we know of were exposed eventually, no matter how tight the supposed security is, because humans are terrible at keeping secrets for very long. So the bigger the number of people you require to keep this secret, the less likely it's true.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is Donald R. Prothero. He's taught college geology and paleontology for 40 years. He's the author of numerous books and scientific papers. And we're talking about his new book, which I consider actually an important book, but also a good book, a fun book to read. Weird Earth, Debunking Strange Ideas About Our Planet. Now, I came, you know, I know about Flat Earth, I know about the Hollow Earth, but I came across something in your book that surprised even me, and that was Are Dinosaurs Faked? Now, yeah. I've actually talked to authors debunking creationism, which would say that humans and dinosaurs were living at the same time.
Yeah.
But the idea, and this is we were talking about conspiracy, the idea is that every single fossil, and my mind boggles thinking about how many fossils are extant in museums and collections, are created, are faked by, and I love this term, big paleo.
I wish we had a big paleo.
Don't you wish that? I would just love the concept of big paleo. But that idea that... every single fossil, there's like a factory somewhere that scientists are overlooking where people are cranking out these fossils. But here's the interesting thing that you brought up, and again, this is a term I never knew. This idea, part of it started as what's called the Poe, P-O-E.
Yeah.
Talk about that, because that was amazing to me.
Yeah, a few years ago, a guy on the internet by the name of Nathan Poe created a little axiom, which has now become very widespread, which is that the reality gets so strange sometimes it's impossible to tell between satire and the real thing. And so that there are lots of things on the internet now which are tended to be satires of the bizarre and the weird things that humans do. But now that we've seen reality get stranger than anyone's imagination could have ever created, you can't really tell the difference. And so lots of times they'll put up these tremendous hoaxes on the internet, knowing full well it'll get a lot of attention. And you don't know at first whether that person is dead serious or they're doing a satire on society. And sometimes you have to do a lot of digging to figure out where the source of it is and who the person behind this is, whether they really are serious. Well, in this particular case, it's both. There was a woman who did a series of these articles called Christians Against Dinosaurs and created her own fictional organization and kept posting these things, which they read at first like they're tongue-in-cheek, like they're mocking this craziness. And then you realize there are people who really do think the Bible is not only literal, but that dinosaurs don't exist because they're not in the Bible. And then you realize it's not strictly all satire, because there really are people who are that deluded. And so that chapter covers the expose of that woman who pulled off this Poe for a while and finally got tracked down, although she's never admitted to it. But in the process, it leads you down the rabbit hole, these weird creationist websites and other things like this, which have all these strings of people deep in the conspiracy and Bible nonsense together, and are seriously convinced that somehow paleontologists are rich and have tons of money and are forced to constantly fake fossils in order to get their grant funding. And, of course, that's so laughably opposite of what the real world is. Most paleontologists are getting paid very little because we teach most of us. And the fossils themselves are very hard to get out of the ground and very expensive. And so it's not like you can do this all the time. And not only that, but anyone who actually, you know, if they don't believe the documentary videos, you just take them out to an outcrop. And there's some places, just about anywhere in the country, you can find some outcrops of real fossils coming out of the ground.
That's right.
And you know that nobody took the time to actually fake it because they're still on the rock. So it just shows you how closeted they are. They really don't ever get out, and they only read what they want to read, and they've never watched a science documentary in their life, apparently. And how people can be that isolated and that the studio and that kind of juice is hard for me to imagine. But
well, wait a minute. This is where we come to your last chapter, because this is the big question for me. I mean, we're in the middle of a COVID, an amazing epidemic right today.
Right, right.
And there are COVID deniers, and I've read now reports of people on their deathbed still denying.
Yeah,
that it's COVID. So the question, we're not going to be able to do justice to it in this interview, but the big question is, why do people believe weird things? And people who are, you know, I can understand if you're physically there's a problem and you have a problem with, or socially or mentally you have a problem with stuff, but there are smart idiots. That's a term that you use. Why is this going on, and why does it seem to be at such a huge pace right now that more and more and more of this is going on?
Well, that's several threads at once, but let me try to tie them together. The basic answer, as psychologists have known for a long time, is that humans are not rational. Humans are emotional, right? The so-called motivated reasoning is a term the psychologists use for this, which is that we believe whatever fits our preconceived knowledge and believe whatever fits the worldview we already have, usually we inherited from our family and our community. And therefore, we are not good judges of what's fact and what's not. And we tend to do what's called confirmation bias, where we notice the things that agree with us and screen out what doesn't agree with us. So we're always seeing only one part of the world. Now, you add to that the way in which the media bubble works. And so if the people on the right wing, for example, live in a Fox News, OANN, Newsmax bubble as far as media, they never watch anything else. And on top of that, they only browse websites that confirm what they already think. And if you've ever watched the movie The Social Dilemma, which came out this year, of course, Facebook makes money by continually feeding you what you already like and keeps on responding to what you like by giving you more what's similar. So if you're on Facebook, you see a different world if you're clicking on right-wing sites than if you click on other sites. So these people literally do not get exposed to the real world. They will not listen to media that are fact-checked. They won't listen to science. If you're in a religious bubble, that makes it even worse. So there's a tremendous amount of isolation going on there, so that people have no way of knowing and realizing that they're, in fact, completely getting the wrong picture of what's going on in the world. That wasn't possible the day before the Internet made it so easy for people. And this is what also has made these weird ideas in the book such a big part of this, the world as well. That, you know, there were always, you know, flat earthers and hollow earthers and people who think the Earth is in the center of the universe out there. But, you know, up until about 20 years ago, the best they could do was have the little society of their friends and then have mailing lists with the little fashioned mailers. Now, all you have to do is a couple of clicks, and the media, social media engines will direct you to all sorts of garbage sites that confirm whatever crazy idea you're exploring. And then they know how to do that, not for the intent of making you completely miss reality, but just because that's the way they work. And so that's it. It's spread by the Internet now at a rate much faster than it could have been even 20 years ago. So we're seeing a totally different world now. The people live in a virtual world thanks to their devices, and don't actually know what the world outside is. You know, they don't read anything else that isn't already basically filtered to agree with what they think. And that the sad part is that's why our society now is part of what we're so polarized about, is the media don't even overlap very much in what's true, so nobody really knows what's true anymore for that reason. And then in the process, we also get to the point where nobody can talk to each other. And, you know, if you get a steady diet of facts of Fox News, we saw in the last election, you think that your brother or your sister who's grown up with you is an evil leftist instead of being your brother or sister, but you're happy with Russian interference in the Trump administration. So this is how badly it's turned things around. So we don't trust even people we should trust. And we're all basically becoming more and more polarized, even within our own families. And I have this in my family, too, like most people do.
Yeah, no, trust me. But what's the way out of this? And let me just pause. Is it starting to teach critical thinking at an early age, like in grade school? Like, not just assuming that a science class is teaching you critical thinking, but actually teaching critical thinking.
No, my sons have been through all the various high school science classes, and they have a sort of cardboard version of science in the first chapter. You know, they do introduce them a little bit to testing hypotheses and so on, but they don't go very far into how different that is from how we typically think. So there's really, when I tell my college students what they really are doing, that is often a real eye-opener because they didn't learn that in high school. And the problem is, you know, you can't reach people that don't want to be reached.
That's right.
I mean, you can't make school districts even teach science properly when they won't let touch evolution or climate change. How are you going to introduce critical thinking when critical thinking is anathema to the religious right? They don't want you ever criticizing authority, and they think that's bad, right? They have to now the right wing has now offered to argue that you shouldn't have college education because that might make you question your beliefs. So, you know, it's theoretically should be a solution, but the reality is it's not going to go anywhere in this society today. And as I said, with media polarization and separation, how do you reach any of these people? It's very hard to cross over those bubbles and reach the other side. I mean, the only good news here is that times are changing. I mean, one of the people don't mention this very often, but one of the evil geniuses making things so bad is Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's not only behind Fox News, but he's also behind the media in Britain and Australia and all the rest that push this right-wing point of view. I'm just hopeful that when he passes on or whatever, his sons may decide it's not a good business model anymore and change Fox News, although then OAN and Newsmax would take over, and there's still no isolation there. The only other thing I see is that the extremist point of view, it's still there. But if they continue to be very much a old white person's party, demographics are going to get them eventually. The people who voted for Trump this year, 8 years, a high percentage of them won't be around anymore. And that's the only thing I see in the way of hope, is that eventually this kind of extreme point of view just dies off because they don't embrace young people. They don't embrace the growing demographics of women and minorities. And those people are going to be the dominant voters in 8 years especially. So, you know, I think that's self-fulfilling, but I'm just hoping I'm right.
We're almost out of time. I just want to say, I love Hollow Earthers. Mainly because it's such crazy fiction books that have come down through time, and movies. I love movies right. That involve a big screw on front of a machine that burrows into the center of the earth. I just love that. What was the more recent film? You actually quoted it in your book. That was just insane. That had the molten core was slowing down or something.
Yeah, it was a movie called The Core, and Hilary Swank actually did it after she had gotten an Oscar, which sort of startles me because she shouldn't have taken a role from a terrible movie like that, but she did. Maybe she had already committed to it before she got her Oscar, whatever. But it's universally voted by all the geologists I know of as the worst sci-fi movie involving Earth science ever done, because it's preposterous from the very first part of its premise, and every other part is wrong too. And Hollow Earthing, of course, comes from
we're out of time, Donald. But I just love the idea of like sitting down with a geologist and watching that movie. That just cracks me up.
That's right.
My guest today is Donald R. Prothero. He's taught college geology and paleontology for 40 years. He's the author of numerous books and scientific papers. And we're talking about his new book, and it's really good. Weird Earth, Debunking Strange Ideas About Our Planet. Donald, thanks so much for your time, and thanks for writing this book.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on the show.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.